I'll leave you with this with Dustin Chaffin.
You know, we've known everybody for so long, and we've worked in this business, and watching certain people where it's like when they were young comics, and you know, all they wanted was work and respect and fame and all these things, and
not even fame, just stage time,
and recognition, fame, whatever,
validation.
Trust me, it's fame for a lot of these people. Maybe not for us, but for a lot of people, it is.
Right.
You know, it, just that, you know, walking into a room and being admired, and this person's funny or whatever. And so you see people that, you know, we watch people come up and they start to get these opportunities.
Right.
You know, and they start to get like really blessed opportunities to kind of be in front of a camera and make some money and get things. And then they're still just as fucked up as they've always been. And
worse.
It's like the worst. And then they're not happy enough. Like, and then they still complain. And then they still go after everybody. And like, we're all busting our dues in these shithole places. And then they're playing real rooms. And it's like, they're still fucking bitching about it. So it's amazing to me how comics are just horrible people.
Well, I used to think, because, you know, I do my podcast. And my podcast has evolved from relationship to sort of life advice, because everything's so interconnected.
Sure.
And what I feel like more than anything is it's all about validation, what you were talking about, validation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times so many people, they feel inadequate. They already feel inadequate.
Yeah.
And so they're insecure about their inadequacies. And
sure.
So I don't think that they're really horrible. What happens is
some of them are.
Yeah, yes. But I think that's a small percentage. I've changed this thinking, because when you are in a comfortable career position, a lot of times people who are kind of crappy become decent when they get the opportunity.
Sometimes.
A lot of times. The problem is when
they forget people who help them, though.
Absolutely.
There's no shout outs.
Absolutely.
There's no love. Yeah.
Absolutely.
People
but I
forget a lot.
I think what happens is more situation is I'm insecure and I'm trying to get from point A to B, and you happen to be in the way of that, and I don't mind running up your back to go get it.
Sure.
Which is selfishness to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But a lot of times I think I think your brain works as almost like a GPS.
Mm-hmm.
So like the destination, in order to use a GPS, you need the destination.
Yeah.
And the destination has to be really detailed. Otherwise, that arrow just kind of floats across the map.
Yeah.
But what's even more important about the GPS is you need a current location, because the machine doesn't work without knowing where you are and where you're trying to go. And a lot of times, whatever that happiness is, they've never really even defined that. So they're chasing something that they haven't defined, or they're hunting for something that they haven't even defined. They don't even know what they're looking for.
Well, and you should, you know, have a little more love for the guy that actually gave you the phone to put the app on.
Sure.
So,
sure. I agree.
The GPS doesn't work at all. But without the phone and service that I'm paying for it.
Yeah, here's my old iPhone. Here, have this. You can use this because you don't have one. Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah.
But
I kid, because I've actually I've gotten better at that. You know, it's like because I do work on myself. You know, and you know, it's like, you know, we run around with a bunch of comedians, and it's funny because with comics, it's like there's a split between insecurity and confidence.
Sure.
So it's like, you know, it's like we're always like balancing who we're going to be today. You know, we're going to be this like, please, nobody loves me, or we're going to be like, I'm better than you. You know, it's like, it's one or the other. There's never any, you know, gray area there. I feel like as comics, we're always like, you know, splitting between those two emotions.
It's a funny thing is I have this acronym that I follow, and I talk about this on my show all the time.
Yeah.
Is ACE, is authenticity, credibility, and empathy.
Okay.
So always be authentic, be truthful about what you are and who you are and what you really feel.
Yeah.
Even if the feeling that you have is insecure, you know?
Yeah.
Being credible, meaning I say what I do, I mean what I say, and I follow through when I give my word.
Sure.
And what is my empathy? The person that I'm dealing with, how am I able to put myself in that person's shoes to see if I'm reasonable? So I go reasonable, fair, and firm. Am I being reasonable? Am I being fair to the people that I'm dealing with? And am I also being firm about what my boundaries are and what my non-negotiables are? So that, because what happens a lot of times when we lack validity, we will compromise our non-negotiables.
Yeah.
which ultimately we don't. I mean, we compromise it for a while, and then we go, yeah, you know what? I'm not, I don't want to do this no more. And then when you change your mind, it's like, well, you've always put up with this, so why are you not putting up with now? Well, I get to change my mind too, you know? So if you, you know, I try to always be authentic about what the truth is. Yeah. Always try to be credible and keep my word, and just who am I dealing with and what's their situation?
Now, that's a lot, and that's heavy for, you know, guys that tell dick jokes for a living.
Yeah, but, but it's so, but you know what, you're right, it is, but you know what, what I find the truth of it, like, okay, here's an interesting thing, and good friend of ours just got married.
Yes.
We went to his wedding. Right? Mm-hmm. And we don't, you and I have known each other, like, you've known me as long as I've been doing, I've been doing comedy 18 years, and you've been doing it longer than me.
Yeah.
And we don't get to hang out.
No.
But when I see you, there's a camaraderie, there's a love that I have because of the fact that we made it. Whatever that fuck that means is that we're still doing
it. Still standing, yeah.
And then I said something to you at the wedding. I was like, man, who's better than, like, this is.
Yeah, now it was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a beautiful thing you said because you were just saying, like, how much, you know, we giggle.
You know,
how much we laugh and how silly it is.
I'm 52 years old. Yeah. I'm still giggling.
Yeah. But it's like, but how many jobs do people choose where, you know, you're laughing all the time and you're being silly, you're busting each other's balls. Like, it's just, you're basically, you're kids. Like, you get to be kids all the time.
But, and it keeps you young. It keeps you young because of that.
Yeah. Like, he just started, you know, he's new and stuff. And so, but he has enthusiasm. That's why I always like guys like him around me, Spencer, because it's like, you know, he keeps me, like, excited about it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you have to have that. But this whole thing is like, we were all a bunch of comics and we're all just so silly. And it just doesn't stop.
Yeah, and Spencer, I'm probably not going to remember your name at least until you get to your fourth year.
That's fair.
Because I can't.
I'm halfway there.
Yeah,
good.
It's a good name, though. At least you remember that.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
A lot of names. Like, what's your stupid name? So, but it's funny that you say that because it's like, you know, we've seen it all. You know, we've seen, you know, the Boston Comedy Club days. We've been through, you know, all these changes in comedy
clubs
plays,
and open and closed,
and comedy
this,
villages and CBs and
comedy hole and the comedy South Comedy Hole,
The Cellar thing. And it's like all these places, you know, and it's just like, it's interesting to where comedy's at now.
It's funny because I did a show about a week and a half ago, and Maceo was in, not Maceo the comic, Maceo, DJ Maceo from De La Soul.
Okay.
Right? And he was just kind of, and Maceo, De La Soul, you know, they're going through this whole thing with Tommy Boy and the streaming rights and everything, and the boycott, what they call the Tommy boycott. But Maceo saw me, and I was on fire. Like, I was actually smoked out of my brain, but that's a whole other thing. But but I was on fire, and I had such a great time on stage. And was just, and afterwards, he says, "Man, I want to take a picture with you." And I look at him, and I realize who he is, and I go, "You?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm Maceo from De La Soul." Now, De La Soul changed the face of hip hop, like Wu-Tang Clan, De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest, like that. Yeah. And he's like, "Yo, I need a picture with you." And I was like, "No, I need a picture with you." Right. And then we kind of instantly hit it off because the creative aspect of comedy is the same thing as the creative, and that creative energy is the same.
Yeah.
And he could see that I was pushing artistically the way I'm affected by the De La Soul catalog, their whole catalog of music is amazing.
Yeah.
So, and they changed the face of hip hop. And I'm like, just for a dude like that to go, that's, you know, it would be like Bruce Lee going, "Man, good set." And you're like, Bruce Lee, just like, because he gets the, maybe don't get comedy, but he gets that this is a little bit different.
That it's what craft and it's like, it's
and that you're
do.
Doing something. Yeah. Different than everybody else is doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the other things we, you know, Amy Schumer did spots with us at Stand Up New York on a Tuesday for 11 people. And so the other things we also know that the difference between somebody who becomes a megastar and the difference between somebody who's just doing spots or the working comic is a choice. Yeah. It could be you tomorrow. It could be. And so in New York, nobody really cares what you're doing. Because the only thing that matters is being funny on that stage. I want I want the accolade. I want an unsolicited compliment from Dustin Chafin after he's watched me for 18 years and go, man, that means more to me than anything else, because here's a dude who's been entrenched in this business and understands it and goes, yeah, man, you made me. The biggest compliment is, yo, you made me push my pen.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so
it's like last week we had Dan Soder and he was talking about he saw Adam Sandler like get all giddy about seeing Dave Attell.
Right.
And he was just like, oh, Dave Attell. Like, you know, half the world doesn't know Dave
Attell. Right.
They all know who Adam Sandler is.
Right.
But he gets it. And, yeah, and to him, that was his thing. Was,
yeah,
like, oh, my God, I'm a dumb, you know. I get to talk to Dave, you know.
Yeah. Like, and Dave's like, stop. So close to me.
Adam. Got a cigarette? Well, that guy's interesting because it's like, you know, he's just, I mean, if there's ever been a guy that was just a fucking stand-up comic.
Yeah.
It's Dave Attell.
Yeah.
Like, there's no podcast. Yeah, there's no radio show.
Yeah.
This TV show is basically him being him.
Yeah, right.
When he used to drink.
Right,
and
right.
And it's like, but it's just.
Well, he doesn't drink anymore.
No.
Really?
Yeah, it's been probably about 8 years or so.
Wow.
He's a little behind me, yeah.
So there's a lot of coffee.
A lot of coffee, a lot of American Spirit cigarettes, and candy. The guy's crazy for candy.
Oh, yeah.
He'll bring in, like, just Halloween bags of candy and give them out to the staff. Because like, I get it, because when you stop drinking, you crave sugar.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah.
But,
well, that's the thing, too, is, like, you know, that's a weird thing, too, being, like, not the difference between being drunk or drinking,
uh-huh,
and then I was more drunk than drinking, and then being sober in comedy.
Right.
That's a whole other experience.
Yeah.
Where it's just like you have to kind of like, you're so aware all the time, you know. It was before, it felt like it was more like, you know, it had this rock and roll feel to it, you know.
Yeah.
I do a shot, that motherfucker, right.
Yeah. Devil's horns.
You were just delusional.
Yeah.
And then when you'd eat your dick and wouldn't even know it, you know.
Right.
Because you're just so blasted, you're just like, man, whatever, you know.
But it also has a lot to do with your own, again, this kind of understanding what your current location is.
And some people are good at it.
Oh, yeah.
Greg Wilson can get drunk, and he's funny.
He's
fucking funny.
Yeah,
whether you think he's brilliant or not, he's still actually funny on stage.
Yes.
And people laugh, and it's a whole thing.
Here's the thing.
People can do it. Stand-up can do it.
As long as you know me,
yeah,
I've never been a dude who really drank on stage. You probably have never really seen me drunk ever.
I don't think so. A little bit after the bar or something.
Yeah,
silly.
but not like... And I just started smoking weed on stage, and it just opens my head up, because I give zero fucks anyway.
Yeah.
But when I'm on weed, it's like my third chakra's open, and I'm like, and I just where I would make comedic choices that I would never make any other time, because there's this ordered, you know, we get into this ordered thing. I want to talk about the rhythm for a second. Spencer, this is so, you're so lucky right now, because this is, you are absolutely, because young comics don't get this talk unless they're friends of mine. So, you know, we learn to manipulate the audience into laughter.
Yeah.
But what we don't understand is the audience starts to manipulate us into a particular rhythm, right? So it becomes Pavlovian in that you get the laugh, you say the joke in a certain way, and then what happens is with time, years and years, you start to actually talk into that rhythm.
The
pauses become,
sure,
and you have to, on a base level, as you're learning how to be funny, you need to learn that rhythm.
Yeah.
Because that rhythm is the thing that makes you funny. But what happens is you start to get a rhythm, and whether or not you realize it or not, the rhythm actually, the laughter dissipates in the audience the longer set you do, because they get a bead on your rhythm. So if I go dun 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 dun, everybody goes dun dun in their head, because it's just, we've been programmed that way. So even when you gain the rhythm where you know how to make that laughter, the audience subconsciously starts to understand what your rhythm is. And even if they don't know what the punchline is, they know the punchline is coming because it's the rhythm. They start to get a beat on your rhythm.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And the only person I've seen that not affect is Attell, because, yeah, you know, I used to call Attell the Allen Iverson of comedy, because Allen Iverson, when he was playing and he was the answer and you were like, he did that crossover.
Yeah.
If you stuck him, he'd do it again and then he'd shake you.
Yeah.
So Attell's brain is so warped that his punchlines are so outrageous that even though you know it's coming and you think you're going to, you know what he's going to, you have no idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He'll be like, I'm fucking a monkey in a hammock. And you're like, what? Right? So he still gets you.
Yeah.
But as comics, there's, yeah, a lot of people that we think are, we thought were funny, and we still think are funny,
yeah,
but we don't laugh at them anymore because we have a beat on their rhythm.
Well, there's two, like Todd Barry, yeah, Ted Alexandro. There's certain people, it's like, they just have a perfect kind of jazz-esque way of talking into,
sure,
the microphone. You know, it just works for stand-up.
Sure, sure.
I've noticed with my rhythm, it's like as of lately, I'm funnier when they're difficult. My rhythm gets really funny when they're shitty. And it's like, it's interesting to me. I'm funnier when they're shitty.
I've been watching you for years.
Yeah.
I would definitely
when
say,
they're shitty, I'm just like, mother. And I just get all,
you know,
this,
why?
Like,
because it takes you out of your rhythm. Because
I'm just like, you fuck, get the fuck, you know, yeah, I just, yeah, go, yeah, after them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's funnier.
Yeah.
And then I eventually get them. But it's like, if you're a little shitty in the beginning, I'm probably going to have a good set.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're perfect in the beginning, it's like, ah,
yeah,
walk through this motherfucker.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's also kind of the where we're comfortable.
Does weed help your rhythm?
It removes the rhythm. Like, so
it removes that thing.
Yeah, so,
okay.
I mean, you know, we grew, yeah, up, you know, I mean, you were a big proponent of Patrice. And
sort
you
of
gave well, I mean,
there's a love hate. There's a love,
yeah,
hate.
But you,
I'm not gonna lie.
But you put,
oh,
him
absolutely.
Off.
I thought
you
he was a comic.
You thought he was,
absolutely,
a great comic. And,
yeah,
and the thing with him is there was always, yeah, this kind of stream of consciousness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And stream of consciousness doesn't have a rhythm because,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
as you're,
it's
thinking,
thing, yeah,
it's a real thing. And that he was one of the few guys.
He was doing it early. Yeah.
Yeah, like
Stanhope, like certain guys that were doing it.
Yeah,
like,
but
yeah,
it was. It's not. Yeah. And the guys who do it, you go,
yeah,
like as young comics, I mean,
yeah,
you know, I was young when you were already, yeah, kind of established. It's, you're like, what the fuck is, what is this?
Yeah, yeah,
like I can't, I don't even understand it. And it's funny, but I don't understand it. And just watching that rhythm not exist, it's almost like it affects the audience in a different way.
Well, I saw, like, with Patrice, I remember when he, like, I remember he was working on that special, his
yeah,
first half hour, and like I remember like giving him tags or running it through.
Mm-hmm.
Like people don't even know this shit, you know.
Right, right.
And he's like, we're giving him tags for that special, and like he's trying to run it at Boston and,
mm-hmm,
with like no crowd. We're just like,
mm-hmm,
trying to keep the time and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then the night of, were you there for the taping?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and
what, for Elephant in the Room or the
no,
HBO?
No.
The
half
HBO.
Hour HBO.
Yes, I was there.
And,
for both.
Yeah, at both. The interesting both. And, you know, he had a little hard time after Bill, you know.
Well,
yeah, it was like.
You're
like,
right. Well,
he did. After, I mean, Bill kind of, I felt Bill woke him up as a comedian.
Yeah.
I felt that particular, just following Bill on that particular
this
show.
This is a great conversation because.
Yeah, I feel like woke him because,
yeah,
he was like, he was always good and he was always don't give a fuck and he,
right,
was always doing all those things you're talking about. But it changed after that.
Yeah, yeah.
He became a better comic.
Well.
Yeah.
Here's one of the things, too. And we know these guys personally. Bill is a super technical comic, where Patrice was more kind of fly by the seat of the,
yeah,
pants, kind of a passion. I'm going with the passion.
I mean,
of,
Bill will go off on a rant and he'll,
yeah,
he'll explore it a little
but he
bit.
Was
he'll explore it.
Now,
yeah,
he's way more,
yeah,
fluid. But I'm saying if we talk about comics as you know, what kind of comics? Like Bill was a technical comic. Like everything with him was worked out. Like,
yeah,
he wrote it and worked it and,
yeah,
worked,
yeah,
the pauses.
Sure.
And the thing was, I think Patrice was also doing stuff that I thought was, like, so Patrice was, I mean, Bill's
crowd work.
Right, right. And on a special.
Yeah.
Which was insane. And, yeah. 10.
Calling out women in the back row. You can't even see them. What are you doing?
And I saw both of those sets. And honestly, Bill, the first set was about a 9.5.
Yeah.
The second set was a 10. Yeah. Patrice's first set was about a 7.5.
Yeah.
But Patrice's second one was about a nine. And I would say this, though. But Patrice was also, his material was much more harder to sell. Like, he was talking about 9/11 and women.
Yeah,
he'd always
take a risk. He'd always lose, I mean, for a long time. He'd lose half the crowd because of the women shit.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But, you know, I felt like he finally figured it out on Elephant in the Room
because he
finally got vulnerable.
Right.
He's never been vulnerable.
Right, exactly.
Richard Pryor was vulnerable.
Exactly.
All these people, like, that was the one element he was missing.
Yeah.
And he got vulnerable in that special.
And a lot of times we used to look at him walking the room and not giving a fuck as a badge of honor. And then when you become a...
Yeah, but he'd like walk the wait staff.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't get this bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was all fuck her. Like, fuck this club. But, like, he would just...
It's just like, what? But we used, as a young comic, I looked at it, I was like, wow, he really doesn't give a fuck. And then when you get to the point where you headline and you're going, these people came to see me. Like, why am I being abusive to the people that like me?
Yeah.
So it was more of an ego thing than it was. And then when he didn't like where his career was going. And then with Elephant in the Room, he became more humble to it. And he was much more likable. But I mean, you know.
So you guys work together a lot,
you
know, and I know that you've worked hard because there is this thing that happens too when you come from kind of the same cloth.
You start
having similarities and stuff.
Yeah.
I remember people, you know, when I first started, I sounded a little bit like Todd Barry and D.C. Benning.
Really?
That's what people would say, just because I watched them and was around them so much.
And you liked them so much.
And the rhythm.
Yes.
And, you know, and I kind of just would fall into it.
Did you hang out with them as well or no?
D.C., yeah.
Okay.
But Todd, nobody hung out with Todd.
Right. See, the thing was...
But I watched them a lot.
Yeah.
But your thing was you were hanging out with them, you were friends,
we
you
had
were in
the
car
same,
together. Yeah.
We had the same... You know, vernacular, the same slang words. And so I got a big thing where everybody was like, Dante's trying to sound like...
I remember this happening.
Now, the thing was that I started comedy. I was already 30, 34, 36. I was married. I was a stripper for 10 years. I was pimping for 6.
Yeah.
I had dealt drugs.
Yeah.
I fought bare knuckle in pit fighting for money. And so I was never trying to be... So the persona that was considered Patrice's persona was the combination of both of our persona.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't have the skill set to talk about it on stage.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
a lot of the women stuff that we're talking about is the stuff that I talk about now on a day-to-day basis because that was my roots. And it really wasn't his root. Like, he was a big dude who didn't get laid a lot, was a serial relationship. And I was running around just putting my dick in everybody. You know? I mean, I just always, when I met him, I remember I was married, my wife was smoking hot, I had a SUV, I had a job with a pension, and he remember him saying, man, how you just doing comedy 2 years and you got a hot wife? And I was like, because my value is not 2 years of comedy. I have a whole life before, but he couldn't even understand that. So, like you said, you get that. You start to sound like each other because you're, and we really hung.
Yeah.
And then I spent.
Both big dudes. But,
yeah.
You know,
and I spent 2 years not, people don't know this, but I spent 2 years not working with him.
Yeah, yeah.
So that I didn't see him. So after the HBO thing, all the way to the Elephant in the Room, I stopped working with him.
Yeah, yeah.
On purpose. If somebody tried to book me with him, I wouldn't even take the money.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to see him. I didn't want to be influenced. And that's how I was kind of able to find my own voice and kind of find my own lane. Now, you could still see remnants. Like, I don't deny that I wouldn't be the comic I am today if it wasn't for him. But I found my own lane.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny you say Todd Barry is what, like comedy is kind of like martial arts. You have Taekwondo, you have Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you have karate, and you have these guys who were like innovative. Like, you talk about Todd Barry, Mike Birbiglia was a proponent.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Ted Alexandro, this is a crazy thing. Ted, through his own admission, says who influenced him was Todd Barry and Dane Cook.
Interesting.
Which is sort of a low energy.
Yeah.
It's Dane like Cook, you two. Like yeah, yeah. Combine, and if you think about it, he'd do these kind of actions and stuff, but not abrupt and stuff.
Yeah.
And you look at like DeRosa. DeRosa was big, you know, Attell. True. And they Attell.
Dude, Attell has like it's got Big J. Got Metzger. It's got Becchione. It's got Gino. It's I mean, it just goes on and on.
And but Joe. Started working with Patton Oswalt.
Mm.
And so that long story form that he does now is a combination of Attell and him, and then it becomes this other thing.
Well, see, I'm really happy that I work with TJ Miller because he fucking juggles, and I can't do that.
So. Does he really juggle?
Oh, he's a vaudeville guy. Really? Like, nobody knows it. Yeah, but when you go on the road with him, he does an hour, it's like, it's juggling. It's like he's got a ventriloquist puppet he doesn't know how to use, but he has a trumpet that he makes the audience play. Like, it's all these, like, gags. He's a clown, you know?
He's a trained clown.
Like, he admits it. That's what he is, you know?
That's interesting because I wonder how that affects you. Do you know what I mean? Or does it affect you?
Well, it's perfect because we're so different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I'm up there doing religious jokes and blah, blah. So he's going, he's way cleaner than me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it works because it is different. And that's what I like about it is I'm not, like, watching him going, oh, you know, I'm going to get influenced by him.
Does it affect you at all? I mean, does it allow you to be sillier?
He's made me better on stage, like, performance-wise, because he fucking owns the room.
Right, right.
So it's just, like, any sort of, like, hesitation's gone.
Yeah.
You know, where it's, like, working with him, it's just, like, because he'll fly off, he'll jump into the crowd, put a guy in a headlock. Like, he's crazy.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's, like, any those inhibitions are gone.
Yeah.
Like, now that I work with him, I just know that he's going to be cool with me doing whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's not one of those guys, too, you open for, where he's just, like, oh, don't do this, or be clean, or whatever. You know, once in a while, he'll say something. Who was a little much, you know? But and you wonder, you're like, should I be cleaner? But he's, you know, but it does. But watching him, you know, own a room has really been helpful.
And Big J was Patrice and Attell mix,
absolutely.
And then you have these kind of hybrid things that happen, and then it becomes.
But that's what music is.
Yeah,
you know, so it's interesting because like comedy gets more of a negative. Connotation for it, but music is always there.
Yeah, you know,
like Miles sounds like, you know, Herbie Hancock sounds like that. You know, everybody just kind of sounds like each other.
I went to see Clapton, and when I went to see Clapton, people were his fans. Were, Clapton is God, Clapton, and he hushed the crowd, and he goes, "No, Hendrix is God."
Nice.
Like, he made it clear, like, this is who made me. You know, it's
goosebumps.
You're like, Jesus, like who says
that? He gave it up for other people too. I think somebody asked him, who, you know, how's it feel being the greatest guitarist of all time? And Clapton said, I don't know, why don't you ask Prince? It's like he gave it up to people, and that makes you love him even more.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact
that
he's like, he recognizes, like, I get it. Talent.
This dude is like, I'm good, but
these guys is fucking next level.
I
miss Prince.
Yeah.
Don't you miss Prince? I mean,
that's why I'm an atheist. I don't think that that Prince should be dead and Ted Nugent still be alive.
Yeah.
this can't be.
Kid Rock's going to live forever.
Right.
You know? Prince and Prince Tom Petty and like all these.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you kidding? Horrible. Yeah. You know, there's no karma.
Yeah, Brody died. Brody Stevens died. Yeah. Good dude. Carrot Top will live forever.
it's an interesting thing, but I think you start to I think when the fun happens is when you start practicing that authenticity. When we can get out of that, out of our way about what we expect to happen in the, you know, in the industry, in the business itself.
Yeah.
As opposed to enjoying what, like, I feel like now I'm stronger than I've ever been as a comic.
Yeah.
I think that there are comics who are as strong. I don't think you have somebody who's stronger. You know what I mean? Like that.
I agree.
That rip kind of energy. But it's also a situation where I'm still trying to be authentic, and I have to assume that if I stay on this authentic path, that things will work out.
Well, that's one thing I like about you is like when we, you know, we're huddled like at this wedding, we're kind of huddled under a table together because it's like you're one of the few people that...
And Leah's screaming on us.
Nah, she's fine. She's out dancing and we were just playing. And what's great about it is like I really believe I don't put the legends on pedestals.
Right.
I really feel like we're all capable of getting to that level in stand-up.
Sure, sure.
You know, I could rattle off 5 jokes that are as good as Bill Burr's jokes, sure, or as good as the tell. Sure. Like, we all have that in us.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if
yeah.
you don't think like that, yeah. then you won't rise.
Yeah.
You'll just be this mediocre comic all the time.
Yeah.
And you'll
yeah.
just stay in a certain spot, and you yeah. won't elevate. And so that's what I like about you is, like, you know, some guy, whatever, you're like, that fucking guy. You know? And it's just like, nobody has the balls to say anything about it. You'll say something, and I'll just laugh, because I'll think the same thing. And but nobody else will say it, because he's friends with whoever or whatever. And then it's funny that you said at the wedding, you were just like dissing on people, and it was beautiful, because I was like, thank God, because I'm thinking this the whole time.
Right. It's also, I realize that time is the commodity. It's not fame. It's not possessions. It's not, you know, money. It's time, because without time, you have none of those other things. If your life yeah. ends, and yeah. when we just watch a motherfuckers pass away, just yeah. William Stevenson pass, you yeah. know, we watch
Brody
just pass, and it's like,
Brody was tough, man.
Yeah.
Suicide thing is always rough for a comic.
But, you know, he also was kind of, like, there was a whole thing with
he
him. Like,
he
was,
yeah.
and he was always in and out of that anyway. You yeah. know, I didn't really know him personally, but I met him yeah. a couple of times. Good dude, but you go, man, like, to be tortured like that,
yeah,
and you know, like Artie, the stuff that I mean, and people yeah. love Artie, you know, they
what?
No, Artie Lang.
Artie Lang, yeah.
And one of the problems with his addiction, I think, is because they love him so much that people give him drugs.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to, and they love, because they, oh, you, this is what you like, well, you know, we
yeah,
and
yeah.
it's so, you know, like, to be so lovable and so liked, and then to be tortured in that place because you're almost a prisoner of how likable you are.
Yeah, and then you wake up without a nose. Yeah, that's
it's
just not,
crazy.
That's not a good look.
And here's the thing, we will still accept him and love him, like,
sure.
you know, because he's just such a genuinely good dude,
yeah.
you know, and I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's like, when I see you, I'm like, you know, it's going to be good. This is going to be fun, right?
Well, that's the thing is, you know, it's like, it's a safe zone, you know. You
yeah,
find
yeah.
comics in this business
yeah.
that you can kind of, because you need that.
Yeah.
Like, you
yeah.
need to be able to shit on people in a safe place, because
yeah.
there's a lot of ridiculousness
sure,
that's
sure,
happening
sure,
in
sure.
stand-up. But, no, nah, man, it's just.
And then who would we it's you, me, Mike Acosta, like, dudes we never, and
yeah.
then everybody's on board,
yeah, yeah,
and we and it's happening,
yeah.
like, at any moment, you'd have 3 comics who never hang out together, all of a sudden they're together,
yeah.
and we're having the best time.
Yeah,
it's just like, this is great. This is amazing.
Yeah.
All over again.
No,
you know,
it's a band of brothers.
Lucky.
It's a band of brothers, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Sisters, and, you know, it's like, yeah, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't backtrack it any other way. This just is what it is, you know.
You also can't look at somebody else's success and go, yeah, I should have that, because in order to have that, you got to be that dude. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like you can't just cherry pick somebody's life and go, this is, I want his riches. Like, you know, Kev Hart came up with us. And I mean, he was a little before me, but
He's before me.
Is he before you?
Yeah, he was already a big deal.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, a big deal, like, he was working.
I'm not that old, man.
That motherfucker's been doing longer than me.
Well, Kev, here's Kev, but...
Because all those Philly guys, those guys were headlining in Philly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
they were, yeah. they, like, I came to New York, and I just, you know, I figured it out here. Like,
uh-huh.
those guys were, they were already a big deal at, like, you
yeah.
know, wherever that.
Yeah, but then when
Philly
they came
scene.
Here, nobody cared.
For a little while.
Yeah.
But they did, because everybody took care of each other.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
you know, that's
they
the
had
thing.
A click, yeah.
It's a contingency where it was just like, Keith took care of everybody,
yeah,
Keith
yeah.
Robinson, and so, like, yeah, it's, they kind of, like, you know, looked out for each other.
Yeah.
They weren't, yeah. I mean, that's, he's from Texas. So I'm
yeah.
like, you know what? Texas love. Like, because
yeah.
there's none of that happening.
Right, right.
So,
right.
so I'm creating it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But with Philly, it's like, bam. It's like all this Philly.
Yeah, I just met a bunch of young dudes in Miami, and
yeah.
they're trying to start a.
Yeah.
A
good for them. Yeah.
Thing.
Those guys are cool. I could do that show. Yeah.
Yeah. The guys were like, oh, this is the guy that we really like, and he's been doing comedy 3 years. And
yeah.
I'm like, there's
yeah.
no way you could be good at 3 years. It's
yeah.
just, it's an impossibility to be. It takes time to be able to do this well.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But it, yeah, it's a, you know, you could say, I want the what is Kev worth now? You know, $65 million or whatever.
Knows, yeah.
But the point is, you gotta show up for that. Like, I don't know if I ever want to be a person who there's 80 people whose jobs rely on me waking up and doing my job. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's literally a machine.
It's a good problem to have, though.
Yeah, but I'm saying, would you want that?
I wouldn't mind a little bit of that freedom.
No, I mean, would you want that, like, in the context of that? Like,
I'm a spontaneous person, so freedom, yes.
Yeah.
To be able to fucking just, hey, you know what? Maybe I'll go to Australia today.
Uh-huh.
Like that kind of freedom.
Yeah.
And, hey, look at that gold chopper, looks nice.
Yeah. You
know? You know what I mean? I've always wanted a Lamborghini.
But you can't.
I mean, that's the kind of freedom he has.
Right, but you can't have that and not have.
There's price to pay with that. That's when you get people extorting you.
Yeah.
You get people coming at you. Like, there's definitely that. And I see that with TJ where it's like people came after him a lot.
Yeah.
And so it's like they definitely – you're constantly trying to take you down.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that. That's not worth the price for sure.
It's like, you know, just use Mayweather. Yeah. Like, Mayweather will party with his dudes and they'll be in the club.
Yeah.
But 5 o'clock, he's up running, doing road work. So he'll be like, you guys can stay and party all you want, but 5 o'clock – the bouncers, his crew, everybody's trainers got to be up at 5 o'clock in the morning. So you can hang out if you want to.
Yeah.
But tomorrow we got to go to work.
Yeah.
And so, in a way, you like I said, you can't just cherry pick. You know, you can't just take the gold helicopter. You got to take everything that gets you the gold helicopter. Whereas if you do it yourself, then you can have the gold helicopter and still be in the context of who you are.
Yeah, well, with Kevin Hart, it's like he, you know, I remember early on people were saying stuff like, you know, like even when he was a brand new comic, I remember when he was not really working, people were saying that he incorporated himself, which is like, you know, that was like one of the big deals. Like, what do you mean you incorporate yourself?
Yeah.
Like things like that.
Yeah.
He had a vision
of
knowing that he was going to be an entity and that he was going to be an enterprise. And so he saw what he wanted and he went for it, you know, and he's very.
And he wanted to be famous.
He wanted to be famous. Yeah. And he's good at being Kevin.
Yeah.
He's this funny little sidekick dude, and it works, and it's like, you know, it is what it, his stand-up, whatever, you
it's
know,
a good, he's a it's good all comic. Right. I mean, he's a good comic.
He's a storyteller, so it's like, he, you know, I think it got better once he was able to kind of just, like, tell stories. It's, like, it's okay. I mean, I'm not even going out of my way to watch it.
Right, right.
But, and he's nice. He's sweet to comics.
Sweet guy.
He'll
sweet
come
guy.
Up and fist pound you and be on good set. Hey, what's up? I remember you. Like,
he's
cool. I mean, there's like 5 guys with him when he does it, but he's, you know,
But they're all employed by him, and I remember he was doing an interview, and I was at the stand, and I walked up at the stand, and he was doing the interview, and he saw me, and he was like, excuse me, and stopped the interview to come and give me a pound, and I'm like, and it's like, we were cool like that, but you just don't assume that people will be that humble. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, what's up, Kev? He was like, how you doing, big dude? Da, 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 da. I was like, oh, and he was like, oh, right, let me get back to it. But it was like, it was so genuine.
Yeah.
And I was like, ah, you know, you just can't begrudge his success because he was a kind dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you get, because I think he knew that he had value before everybody else did. And so he wasn't insecure about being validated. He was just waiting for everybody to catch up to what he thought about himself in the first place. You know, and I think that's another thing is that we get into this place where, as human beings, we want to be validated. We want somebody to go, man, you're good at what you do and stuff like that. And a lot of times when we don't get that, then we get insecure about it. And then we're fighting ourselves. It's like, I'm insecure, but you can't show that you're insecure. You can't say it.
Yeah.
You can't say this makes me feel uncomfortable. But that goes back to what I said in the first place, is the authenticity. That if you say something that hurts my feelings, you know, artistically, and I just go, man, that really hurt my feelings.
And it's hilarious when a guy looks like you.
And then you go, but I give you the opportunity to be a friend and go, man, I didn't mean it that way.
Sure.
And I go, all right.
Yeah.
Whereas if I don't, then I have this animosity and I'm holding this animosity and then it's festering and it comes out in some other way. And I've just learned with time to be pure in my thinking and honest in my thinking.
Yeah. Don't work on yourself, man.
It's good to wake up every day. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
to
yeah.
know that I get another day to be authentic, be yeah. credible, and still be empathetic to other people's situations. So a lot yeah. of things when people would do stuff that would really piss me off, I go, I get it. You know, not that I allow it, because yeah. I don't really take much shit, but I get that this comes out of some insecurity and
sure.
and stuff like that, and I can just let it roll off my back because, you know, the two things that we'll always have to do as human beings is give forgiveness and ask for forgiveness. Like, it's just that yeah. never ends. And so if you go into that situation and we look at the humanity in each other, you know, you just learn to accept people.
That's one thing that I've when I have meltdowns, which are frequent on stage mm-hmm. lately, my meltdowns will basically be geared towards audience members not like allowing that humanity of us kind of supporting each other in this situation
right.
of stand-up comedy.
Right.
It's like, because I'll be like, dude, look, you wanted Sinbad, I wanted a better crowd. Like, let's, you know what I mean? Like, we both wanted something better. We both wanted something better from this situation. Yeah. We can go into this and both positively get through it together.
But
we can just be dicks to each other.
Even saying that.
Because I got no problem being a dick.
Right, right. Even saying that is what I'm talking about. The yeah. authenticity of that. The truth
yeah.
of that.
It's like, I get it.
Okay.
And it's like, you know.
And unless the person is a sociopath, they get it too.
Usually, yeah. And you'll break most, 80% of the crowd yeah. with that kind of mentality.
And that 20% you yeah. don't want to because they're just being jerks. They just really are those kind of people that you don't really give a fuck about. And that, you know, that's one of the things that I've learned, you know, even from watching Patrice. Because he would dig in,
yeah,
you know. But then but then we could all say that he dug in a lot of times when it wasn't necessary. When he made it uncomfortable when there were other people there who loved him and wanted to watch him, and he wouldn't even give them a chance to enjoy him because of some other jerk. And it's just not fair. It's just not fair. Like they want to see you.
Yeah.
Look, if somebody is being a jerk, I'm all about cranking it up. Like, I start yeah. pulling levers and cranking up the engine. All right, we're doing this.
Yeah.
You know, I.
Let me bring you in real quick.
Yeah.
This is the longest intro ever.
Sorry. I thought we were rocking.
We are rocking it. But I like to do that. I like to bring it in okay. in case somebody gets in mid
yeah,
thing
yeah.
and doesn't see what's happening. So, yeah, thanks for being on here.
Thanks for having me, bro.
Doing the show.
Really, thanks for having me.
No, it's great. And, you know, it's like you've done a lot of cool stuff, man. It's like some Comedy Central. Like, you were the first guys to do the Russell Simmons stuff.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, the Russ stand-up at the El Rey.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
That was the cool. That was
before they blacked
credits.
It up and called it the Ruckus.
That was your Showtime White Boys in a Hood.
Yeah.
Like, they all had that one first thing, and you're just like, okay, I'm a real comic now.
Yeah.
And the stuff, you know, you did a lot of Sirius XM stuff, also Patrice, and then
acting stuff.
Acting stuff, a lot of cool acting stuff.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of cool movies and fighting. Like, you had a great, that was one of your big roles.
The
first, you know, kind of on screen, like
a
lot of Dante was in
there. Yeah, a lot of Dante.
Yeah, we saw a lot of good Dante and a lot of television.
You know, every time they show that fight scene, Vecchione used to call me up and go, man, I don't know why this guy just doesn't talk to you. He's so easy to talk to. Why do you have to fight, guys?
Hilarious. I did a lot of episodes of Blacklist.
Yeah.
That's
a
great show.
About 8 episodes
and,
of that.
Power.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff. So, Dante Nero in the building, everybody.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Dante. And it was funny because I mean, you touched on it a while ago, but you know, we just had a porn star in here, former porn star.
Yeah.
And then you were a dancer.
Yeah,
male
stripper,
exotic dancer.
Yeah.
Stripper and stuff. And so do you feel that being, you know, dancing around in a hammock, like helped you with stand-up comedy? Like,
well, the business is exactly the same.
Yeah.
It's like the format of it is like, okay, you decide you want to do this.
Yeah.
You create your character.
Sure.
Right? You hone your character. And then you run around doing spots.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like on a weekend, on a Friday, I would do 5 or 6 spots, different. Just 5, just running around. I had a little
different characters.
No, same. Like I had a
what was character.
I was Prince Mandingo. I
I
had if you remember Shaka Zulu, the movie Shaka
Zulu.
Sure. So I saw that where there's a scene where he reclaims his throne and he comes with this headdress and I was, you know, I have 3 older sisters.
Yeah.
And so there's this tall black dude, 6-pack, just crazy with this, and he has a train and a, a scepter, and he walks in, and he basically walks down, and the crowd opens up, and he walks to the throne, and he actually, his brother is in the throne, on the throne. He kills him, and then takes the throne, just stabs him there. First, he makes him submit and go, he goes, my brother, you please don't kill me. And he goes, you submit to me? He goes, yeah, and then he kills him and takes the throne. But I was sitting down watching this, and my sisters, my sisters were really different in people, in terms of the guys that they date, like total opposites. And but this guy walked down the that aisle, and they all were like, and I was like, what was that? So there was this kind of masculinity about him, this strength and masculinity.
Sure.
And I was like, that's my character.
Hilarious.
That's
it. Did you do it before you had a character? Did you had to pick?
I was.
So you're like Bringer shows.
I did.
Like, actually, what's that like? What's the open mic circuit like for the starting out?
I came out as a butcher. I had a big baloney. I used to have a baloney.
Yeah, you did.
I had another time. I had a scholarship for fencing. I went to college on I know.
The lives these comics live. I'm just like, what? Love fencing.
What weapon you like?
I don't know. I had a buddy that had the fencing stuff, and we just
I used to do foil, which is the small skinny thing. It's kind of the small guard. It's a small guard. You hit on the like a vest, like the upper body only. Now epee is what the Three Musketeers, which is the one with the big bell.
That
you can touch anywhere from head to toe, anywhere you can stab. And there's no right away. Like, you don't have to block and parry. You could just, it's kind of free for all. And then saber is the thing where custard, where you have the thing over the hand, which is a horse weapon. So you only hit from the waist up, but you can also slash.
Let's get back to your other sword.
Right. But that was the character. So I was doing these goofy, trying these goofy things. And then when I saw that, I was like, that's it.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of hone that character. And then you literally will do anywhere from clubs and private gigs in people's houses.
Yeah.
Bachelorette
like
parties.
Like Santa.
Same thing. And then you're running around from bird to bird, doing spots.
Doing spots, yeah.
Until you're exhausted. And then you come home and you pull a little dollars out
there. Probably a few more chicks, though.
A few.
I've had some good sets, and I've got laid off a few sets, but nothing, but I wasn't wearing,
it's funny, because I was actually a mobile DJ first. And I was...
You were vice president at one point.
I wish. And I was a mobile DJ, and I remember thinking to myself, like, back in the days before there was laptop DJs, And hard drive DJs, you had milk crates.
Absolutely.
So at the end of the party, when everybody would be running home with the girl of their choice, we would be carrying speakers and milk crates, putting them up in wherever we stored them. So it's the sun's coming up and we're working and everybody else is going home with the cutie.
I
was like, I got to find a way to not carry speakers. And I was like, I do this strip thing. I can put a G string and a cassette tape in my bag, a little baby oil. I'm in business. So whatever borough I was in, I would snatch a girl from the and stay in that borough. Like, just sleep. I mean, it was that easy because of your ability to, it was the business which just made women available to you in that way.
I also think it was just like, I don't know much about it, but exotic dancing or whatever, I feel like it was newer, you know what I mean? So it wasn't like, this, like, now I feel like it's like, dude's gay. But back then, it wasn't like that yet.
Well, they did, that was the stigma.
Was
it
still?
It was the stigma, but we changed this. I kind of changed the stigma.
Yeah.
So, because that was a thing.
It was,
Yeah, it was a thing, but we would try, for instance, I had, like, this edict that and probably would get me in trouble, but if you did gay shows, you couldn't do straight shows.
Oh, okay. Probably because, more money in gay shows.
Right? Yeah, because then that's what blurred the lines a lot of times, and then women wouldn't come to see you if they thought you were gay.
Gotcha.
You know, so it was a marketing thing more than anything else.
Kills the fantasy.
Yeah. There was this dude who did kind of was doing both.
Yeah.
And just kind of not the brightest dude in the world. And he's doing a show for girls.
Yeah.
And then he's doing his stunt on the floor, and all of a sudden he runs and grabs a Heineken bottle and he shoves a Heineken bottle up his ass. And we're like, what? Right? And the girls were like freaked out.
Yeah.
But he had like the carrot top of ass.
Yeah.
And he, in his mind, because he was doing both, it just,
yeah.
He was like, it worked in the gay crowd. And yeah.
So how do you go from that world to stand-up comedy?
It was easy because
How does it happen? Like, tell me, like, what was the transition period?
So
did you watch comedy?
I was
a comic
freak. Like, as most of it.
Would you go out and watch shows?
No, I would, like, even when I was a kid, like, I used to sneak
home. Who's the first comic you saw, like, in a live setting in New York? Remember? I saw Tony Woods as the first guy I saw.
I don't even remember. I mean, but I always
went
to comedy. I remember, well, I can remember shows. I remember going to the Strip.
You did? Okay.
When, I saw Keith Robinson and Jim Norton.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Jim Norton was trying to get past at the Strip.
Oh, wow.
And he was doing
this. And you were just an audience member.
Yeah, yeah. And he was doing this thing about him having little red nipples like a rat.
Okay.
Like little pink nipples.
He's still doing that bit, yeah.
And, but as a kid, I used to sneak home and listen to my father's Richard Pryor, Red Fox,
nice.
Mom's Mabley.
Sure.
George Carlin, Bill Cosby albums and stuff like that. And then when Carson was on, I would stay up late and sneak, and like I would be laid out on the floor looking through my mom's bedroom watching Carson.
Nice.
And I mean, like, I knew like Gary Muledeer. You know what I mean? Like obscure comics that nobody would know. Yeah. Emo Phillips and Paula Poundstone. And I
watched. That was a beast.
Yeah. And I was, I was so, like, as a kid, I was watching that.
Sure.
And I always wanted to do comedy. I was just afraid. I mean, and it was easier to be physically naked than it was to be emotionally. Because as a comic,
that's
you're
huge.
Emotionally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then Def Jam hit. And I was promoting these huge male reviews, like 4,000, 2,000, from 2,000 to 4,000 people. And I was doing like elaborate stuff. Like one year I came out of a cage. I had a cage built. I had them roll me out in a cage. Another year I had a throne where I had bodybuilder chicks carry me above their head. And
yeah.
I did a chariot one year and I had bodybuilder women pull the chat, just insane.
Yeah.
And I was spitting fire and I could drink lighter fluid. And I had to stop that because I would be high and dizzy from the lighter fluid going through the line in your mouth. And I was like, hey, guys, you want to drive me? And, I started booking, Def Jam happened. And then I started booking like Tracy Morgan. And I was hanging out at Uptown Comedy Club.
Okay.
And then Mike Epps and Jim Brewer and Rob McKnight. I was booking these guys to open for the comedy, for the strip shows.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And started that.
All right.
And I really wanted to do it. And I just couldn't. Like, I was writing jokes for years.
Nice.
I had the book, and I just didn't do it. And then I kept doing other things to not do it.
Okay.
So I was going to start.
What?
So I did a clothing line.
Oh,
I did an urban clothing line.
Everything
right?
But,
and then I did. And what happened was, I was working with the phone company. And I was a guy who worked in the phone company, and I was still stripping at that time. And that business was very lucrative at one time.
Yeah.
And anytime you have like an underground business that's lucrative, you have to. There's the dark side of it, and so you might have to pistol whip to get your money
because
it was unregulated and whatever. Or you go do a show, and then a guy tell you, "Oh, I'm not paying you." And you go, you either go, okay, or you go get your money. And so, it was a dude that owned me.
Kids are so soft.
They
have no idea.
It was a dude that owed me a couple stacks, like a couple grand.
Yeah.
And I was actually, like, I was training for the phone company. I was in 2 or 3 years. And I was like, you guys should come. There's going to be about 800 women in a snowstorm. There's 800 women in a club.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just me. And I was like, I'm not gay. I'm like, look, you don't understand. I can't have sex with all of them. You need to come. Help me. And we went to this thing. And I remember this dude that I was doing the clothing line with. I go, listen, I want you to come. I said, I might have a little, a little scrap. Like, I might have to check somebody. But I don't want you to get involved. Because at that time, I had a group called Wet Seduction. It was 16 dudes. A lot of them had been in and out of jail because they had the jail muscles and shit. And, and I was like, I don't need you involved. I got my guys, but I just wanted to let you know I don't want you to walk in. He was like, nah, you, if I'm with you, I'm ride or die. And I was like, look, you have no idea the underbelly that we were. So the guy had booked my guys and not paid them. And he just was like, fuck y'all. And and I said, you know, every time you work for me, you guys make sure you get paid. I go, you're in my face. I go, but this guy cheats you and then nobody does nothing. Nobody smacked this dude in the mouth. Nobody choked nothing. So I said, I tell you, they was like, whoa, well, here's the deal. I'll give $500 to the first dude that smacks him in the mouth. Right. So I put this bounty on this dude. And I was always a dude who didn't have to get angry to smack a dude in the face. It just could be, okay, this needs to be done. Well, you had to kind of be
technique,
that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, but what happens if I smack the dude in the face?
Yeah.
And they're like, we'll give you $100. I go, how I give you $500 and you give me it? Yeah, because we know you'll do it. Right. So we get in the club and we all walk in and this guy comes in late. And they're all revving up, trying to get angry, revved up to, and they're like, yeah. He's like, hey, what's up, fella? And they're like, fuck you. And they, you know, and he doesn't, he has no idea why this is going on. And we go upstairs, and there's a dressing room. We all got our clothes out. And the guy goes, I'm sitting on there's a pool table. And the guy walks in, and I slide off the pool table. And the guy goes, I go, listen, make sure you ever book my guys again, you make sure you pay them. And he goes, yo, who the fuck are you? Bang, and I knocked the dude out.
Yeah.
But what I did was the guy who came with me from the phone company, I knew the guy was coming, and I said, yo, you want something to drink? He goes, yeah, yeah. I go, yo, here's some money. Go get me a such a thing. Get whatever you want. And I sent him out. Then I knocked the dude out, and when he came back with the drinks, the dude was out cold, right? And you don't really realize what that, like, when you live that kind of cold stuff, you don't realize how it affects squares. With like people who don't live like that, because they think you're a sociopath, but it's the rules of engagement, you know. Sure. And
so comedy, I mean, you know, that's a cakewalk,
right?
Point.
Exactly. You know, like, and then he
whip somebody for a $25 spot, you know?
Yeah. Right. Right. Well, he saw that, and then when we started a clothing line together.
Yeah.
I think he always felt as though, like, was a little intimidated because of that. And so he just gave me opposition for the sake of giving me opposition. Like, you're not gonna take advantage of me. And we were trying to do a business together.
Yeah.
And I ended up telling him we were incorporated. We were doing pretty good.
Yeah.
We were moving product. We had a couple of the clothing pieces in music videos and stuff. It was moving. And this guy was just giving me, like, if I said, like, we would argue about hoodies, whether or not they'd had knots or eyelets on them. And I'm like, and then I just was like, I never wanted to do this in the first place. And now I'm fighting with you every day about eyelets. I go, look, just take you take it. I'm gone. And that next day I signed up for a comedy class.
Yeah. And started doing comedy. There you go. Comedy, baby.
That's it. And I had to kind of change the rules of engagement, you know,
you can't really. You got to dial back a little bit. Stand-up comedy. That's awesome. So do you have any road stories or anything that's in stand-up? Like any to do a little crazy road stories if you had any comedy gigs. I don't know if they even compete with like your other
world. Not really. It was a lot. You know, it's definitely a lot easier.
Yeah, nobody's fucking not paying.
And I was, I was 290. Yeah. Rich shit house. Yeah. They weren't really fucking with me.
Yeah, people behave when you're around. Yeah, but,
I'll be like, yo, I'll be like, did you see Steve? And they're like, somebody go, he's a dick. And I'll be like, he's always nice to me.
Yeah,
and
they
go, dude, he's a skinhead. I'm like, I thought he had cancer.
That's
hilarious. So it's like.
Yeah, like Dan Natterman's going to have a different life coming up than you.
Yeah. It was, but I mean, I did, just people being unprepared and me not knowing what to ask for. I remember doing a comedy show, standing on a wooden chair with no microphone in a bar.
Nice.
Like I was,
we did that together.
Yeah. We might have did that game.
In the Hamptons?
And I'm just yelling into a crowd with the TVs on and it's just like,
yeah.
What?
So makes you stronger, though.
Yeah. Oh, sure. And then you learn that when you get that gig in Rome, New York, right? Or, you know, there's always some city like Venezuela, Philadelphia, some exotic but shithole.
Yeah.
You learn, we want to have a comic come out here, and you go, do you have a microphone? Do you have a stage? Do you have a place for people to... You start to learn to ask these things. Well, the comedy is easy to set up. We need a microphone.
Yeah.
A PA system and a stage and paper. If you don't have that, it's not comedy.
Yeah, you figure out how to like take care of yourself.
Yeah. So you don't end up in these places. But you know, I remember that.
Well, that's the thing. Like whenever like I hear things about people flipping on sets and things, it's just like you know, it's just like I think it always goes back to like some shitty thing they had to deal with.
You know,
5 years ago when they weren't famous.
Yeah.
And they're like, I'm not doing that anymore. Yeah. Everything's gonna be good.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, brother.
Plug your stuff, your podcast. My podcast is
The Beige Phillips Show. It's a relationship podcast. I'm rebranding it this year. Maybe in another month, it'll be called Man School 202. It's the podcast that I used to do with Patrice on Sirius Radio with him, and we've extended it now. And I do one-on-one consultations on phone consultations about relationships, and
so crazy.
And I've been doing it for 6 years, and so. But if you could follow me on Instagram, that'd be great. Because we need to have Instagram followers in order to be famous now, apparently. It's not about being funny. So if you could follow me
on... I just want to be Country Wayne. That's all I want to be.
If you could follow me at The Dante Nero on Instagram, that'd be great. I'd love to get my numbers up with that. Thanks, man.
I
appreciate you. Thanks. I love you to death, bro.
I love you, brother. It was so good seeing you at the wedding, man.
Yeah.
Rekindled our bro love.
Yeah. And, we do it every time we run into each other.
Hilarious. Even if it's a shitty show, it doesn't matter. But thanks for listening to the show. You can also follow us on Leave You With This on Twitter and our Facebook page. And also, if you're interested in learning the art of stand-up comedy, I do one-on-one sessions, Outlaw Comedy Coaching. You can catch me on that.
You better check him out.
Years of knowledge.
Yeah.
Shout out to our intern, Spencer Celio. Thank you so much.
What's his name again?
Spencer.
I'm 2 more years.
Just say Spencer.
I'll remember it in 2 more years.
Spencer Celio. 2 years, you'll get it down. And thank you for listening to I'll Leave You With This.